AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Do me stretches. Oh. There we go. Hello and welcome back to Pod on the Tyne, your fully independent Newcastle United podcast. My name's Taylor Payne and I'm here with George Culkin and Chris Woff. The transfer window has closed, gentlemen. George Culkin, how are you doing? How are you feeling?
Well, in those terms, I'm feeling quite relieved, feeling quite tired and drained and emotionally exhausted.
Yes, yeah,
pleased it's all over, though. Feel like we say this every year, don't we, Chris? But that just feels like the worst one ever.
Yeah, this one was particularly extreme, and this is not meant to be like a sort of woe is me for everyone out there. It was like, oh, you've got, you know, your wonderful job, you cover football, whatever. It's like, but if you think about how tired George and I may have sounded, times that 100-fold by people inside the club, and that's sort of where this window has been. It's sort of also been in an elongated window because of the Club World Cup, so it opened early, closed for a few days.
Of course, yeah.
And so it's just felt like it's gone on and on, and obviously the sagas that have been within it, the sort of late deals, the deals that didn't happen, the deals that did happen, the deals that nearly didn't happen but did happen, or vice versa. Yes, it's been, I've felt like an absent father, an absent husband for large parts of the last few weeks, and I apologise to Alison James for that, but unfortunately that's the way that things have been.
And also to myself and George as well, you need to apologise.
Well, exactly, I mean, you are my extra wives.
Extra wives, interesting.
Good Lord. That's interesting that you went straight to extra wives there, Chris. That's a strange choice.
Yeah, not sure how we feel about that. Chris talked a lot about going hard on the Matchday podcast.
Didn't he just?
At the weekend.
I was in the car listening to that with the kids, and my 14-year-old son just went, no.
Yeah, I think there's something going on with Chris, with his going hard and his extra wives. But anyway, shall we move on? We've got like the good stuff to look forward to now. We've got the football to get on with, haven't we?
Yeah. Well, that's it. I am absolutely thrilled that the summer transfer window has finally slammed shut.
Over to XG and double pivots and the like, George, now.
Can't wait.
Yes, that's it.
Bring it on.
Let's get into it. Right then, chaps, let's have some headlines at the top. Deadline day number one, Alexander Isak departs, George.
Yes, the saga-iest saga of all the sagas. Finally, it's over. Whether that's good or bad or not, let's get into it at a later date. But yeah, he's moved to Liverpool. It's a British record fee of around £130 million. And yeah, he leaves with a bit of a tainted legacy, doesn't he? But he's gone, and Newcastle can move on.
I have a 37-word statement in response to that.
Yeah, it was a good statement.
Great statement. Deadline day two, Chris. Ewan Wissa arrives.
Yes, so this is another saga that went on. Johan Vissa had a little sort of paddy of his own, similar to Alexander Isak, not to, quite to the same extent, but hadn't been training or playing for Brentford because he wanted to join Newcastle. Newcastle's original bid for Vissa in July was £25 million. They ended up paying a fee in excess of £50 million for him on deadline day, having also had a £35 plus £5 million bid rejected. But he is someone they really want. He brings 19 open play Premier League goals last season, and Newcastle are delighted to finally have him in a new number nine.
George, deadline day three, no significant late departures, but a deal for Will Asula did fall through.
Yes, I mean, there have been a number of departures across the window. That was a strange one, wasn't it? Will Asula finally makes his first Premier League start for Newcastle at Leeds. Didn't have much joy there. And then a couple of days later, being linked very strongly with Frankfurt, there was a £30 million deal on the table and it fell through at the last minute. We'll come on to talk about that too. It does mean, though, that Newcastle have quite a few options in that position this season.
Deadline day number four, Chris. Newcastle defy that Rejection FC tag and fill all of their target positions.
Rejection FC was what Newcastle became known as outside the club, and even Gallows humour inside the club referring to that, because there were all the sort of memes going around on social media about, you know, all these players have rejected them, certainly post Benjamin Šeško. There were even players who hadn't rejected them because they hadn't gone for, like Matias Cunha and Marquee included within it. But Newcastle have signed six players, five of them permanently, covered all the main positions they wanted at centre back, right side winger, centre forward, midfield, and also goalkeeper. And so I think that they end the window stronger than they started it, albeit without Isak.
Meme.
My brother was messaging me about this. I still don't know how he actually said it. I said, like, meme.
Meme.
Yeah, right. He's messaging saying you've
meme. Everybody knows it's meme, Chris.
Yeah, but it's like popular culture, isn't it?
You appear to be the only person in the universe who doesn't know how to pronounce
meme. Well,
it's
sort of like up-to-date things. I don't really get any of that sort of stuff, so.
You're big on unpopular culture, aren't you?
Definitely. George, the lasses, new signings.
Yeah, so another one through the door. Una Savinius jets in. She's a striker, joins from Rosenborg. And so Becky Langley's squad really has been reshaped. The start of the season is hurtling towards us now. Newcastle get their season underway. WSL 2 at Nottingham Forest on Sunday. We will be talking about that at greater length in a podcast to come.
Absolutely. And finally, Chris, new CEO expected to start work.
Yes, so it may even be that by the time this podcast is out, he may have been announced as the new CEO. David Hopkinson is coming in. He is an executive with a lot of experience in North America at the Madison Square Garden Group. Previously, he was at Toronto, and he's also worked at Real Madrid on the commercial side. This has been a long time in the making. Obviously, Darren Eales handed in his notice last September. It's very important Newcastle have some direction, leadership, a sporting director should follow soon, but this, it feels like an important post-window moment.
Lovely stuff.
I didn't walk.
Hey, no! Hey, no!
Right then, chaps, let's get into all of that. Starting at the top, Alexander Isak, of course, that British record £130 million transfer to Liverpool. George, it's fair to say it's a transfer of great emotion, this one, isn't it?
Yes, it has not been straightforward. It has. Feels like it's been lingering over the club, lingering over the whole Premier League, really, for a long time now. It has been a huge distraction. It's been very difficult to move on from. And, you know, I think if we're talking about the positives, it's just great that is now done.
Yeah.
I mean, there will obviously be questions asked about him at Eddie Howe's next press conference, but those questions won't be lingering on in terms of, is he going to be reintegrated? How do you reintegrate it? That whole thing about having an unhappy player in the squad. You know, it does lance a boil in that sense, and Newcastle can move on. I think there's been just that increasing feeling as the days and weeks have gone on that it was becoming more and more unsustainable for Isak at Newcastle. You know, we heard what a section of the travelling support chanted at Elland Road. It's very difficult to come back from that point. It was always the hope all the way through this that, you know, that they would find a way of toughing it out and that they could keep him and bring him back. It's not to be. I think, you know, thinking about the positive of it, you know, it's there. You know, Newcastle now have a group of players at the team, at the squad, who want to be there. You can see it in the way they play. Even at Elland Road, it wasn't a great result, wasn't a great performance, but they've got people who want to be there. That's very powerful. It's not all good news. We have to acknowledge that. But I do think that's the way that we have to start it, by saying that it allows Eddie Howe and his squad and all of us to move on.
Chris, Alexander Isak's obviously been a brilliant player for Newcastle United. Some remarkable goals and a remarkable goals record as well. I was saying to Ollie before we came on and started recording that he's one of those few players that you see pull a black and white shirt on and you think, my God, he plays for us. Rather than for somebody else. But his legacy's been besmirched a bit by his behaviour, hasn't it?
Very much so. I mean, this feels like a very bitter divorce, really. And did it always have to be this way? There's some within the club who suggest otherwise. Alexander Isak may argue, would he have got his move if he hadn't acted like he did? Did he have to be as militant? That's all ifs, buts and maybes. What has happened, and I think that, I mean, there's already people trying to get tattoos of Alexander Isak changed. There's people, like, sort of changing all of their memorabilia that they have of the cup final, where he's obviously the second goal scorer within that. That moment is never going to be removed, and I don't think it should be. I mean, I'm sure it'll be very raw at the moment for people, but in time, that still felt like a huge moment. He still contributed to that. He was still a huge part as to why Newcastle both got back into the Champions League and also won that major trophy. But definitely, there has been that legacy tainted. Now, in terms of losing Isak, I wrote this in Big Inside, the Window Read, which I did on The Athletic, that there are some of the club who sort of accept almost that Newcastle's level is lower in terms of the very top level you can reach. And people took that as a sort of negative. That seemed like a defeatist point of view. But the point that we're trying to make, and I think I agree with them, is that basically Isak is world class. He has an X factor. He does things that nobody else can do. He's proven he can do it in the Premier League 2 seasons in a row. Scores more than 20 Premier League goals. The first Newcastle player ever to do that. And they no longer have that. You can argue, and some have, that you bring in Visser and Valtomada and you've actually got potentially more goals combined than Isak, or more goal contributions combined. That may prove to be the case, but A, Valtomada's come to the Premier League for the first time and he's an experience.
Yep.
B, Visser's moving to a different club. Can they play together? All of that sort of thing. And I largely agree with that, but I think that there is a feeling that actually depth-wise and across the entire team, Newcastle have strengthened and they have a very high level, but is it as high a level as when they've got Isak in the side in the 11? Probably not. It was always an impossible task to replace Isak. They knew that. Even if they brought in Ekitike, even if they brought in Šeško, João Pedro, whoever it would have been, would not have been quite to Isak's level. But Newcastle can still be an elite side. They still have a team. They have managed to make it so that I think they've made the very, very best in the end of a bad situation. But there is that sort of recognition that you have to have, and other people may argue otherwise, but I believe it to be true, that at least in the short term, until we know what Valtomada can do, there is a ceiling to this side, which is probably slightly lower than Isak at his very best.
No, I mean, I totally agree with that. I mean, again, I think how this has ended up has probably been for the, you know, the best for everybody ultimately, but we do have to take several step backs at various points. And if you try and, I think if you zoom in to the Alexander Isak situation and look at it, you know, in the here and now, Newcastle have got the best out of it that they could probably hope for, I think, at the minute. If you zoom out, however, they have sold their, I mean, people shout at you if you say best player, but I mean, in terms of, because people will say that Tonali or whoever else or Bruno is Newcastle's best player, but they have sold their biggest asset to a club that they want to emulate and, you know, and eventually get past at the top of the Premier League. That is the last thing they would have wanted at the start of this window. And, you know, Newcastle don't have, I think, you know, Newcastle have an exceptional team. And what I say that repeatedly, I say that over and over again. What I mean by that is they've got this fantastic collective. We've seen, you know, glimpses of that already against Liverpool at Villa, you know, that they've shown that they still have this great spirit, you know, and indeed a lot of quality as well. They don't have a glut of world-class players, and Isak was definitely one of them. And so they've lost him, and, you know, that should be a source of regret. It should also be a source of, you know, we should just be able to say that. He has been a phenomenal footballer. I totally agree with what you said, Taylor. There have been moments watching him, particularly over the last couple of years, when he is, you know, when he's developed so strongly and come on so much, it's like, oh my God, I cannot believe he's playing for our team.
Yeah.
He won't be any longer. He'll be playing for a different team, a rival team, who have, you know, like it or not, there's been a power play going on there, and they've ended up with their man. Yes, they've paid a premium for it for him, but he's gone. And so Newcastle have lost a fabulous player. I think to come back to his behaviour, it doesn't feel like they've lost a fantastic human being, but they've lost a wonderful footballer.
Well, he did release a departure statement last night, Chris, as well, didn't he? And it was, you know, he finally acknowledges his teammates and the city and the fans and all of that. It all felt a little bit AI, if you ask me, but there you go.
Yeah, I mean, we've had Instagram stories being very 2025 footballer wanting out of a club. We've also not had as a farewell. I mean, we had Newcastle's very abrupt and, you could argue, salty statement when Isak was released. As I mentioned,
I don't think you need to argue that.
the extraordinary thing is, it doesn't even mention his goals record. I mean, that's it says is that yeah. You know, Alexander Isak being sold for, yeah, it mentions his appearances, and it says he's been for a substantial British record fee, which we have to mention as well, that Liverpool are making a big thing about its £125 million flat fee, a lot of which Newcastle managed to get early on, but Newcastle are saying it's worth £130 million to them because of solidarity payments. Now, to explain briefly what that means is basically that sort of like loyalty bonuses which have been waived to Isak and sort of fees that he would be subject to. Now, some fans will say that should just not have been something that should have been paid anyway, but that's the way Newcastle are presenting it, as £130 million anyway, or certain people within the club. But yeah, I mean, the thing about the character, I just want to come at that slightly, because I think Isak has acted terribly. I think the whole situation has been handled terribly, but I don't want this to sort of rewrite history as well, in terms of the way that he's always been a complex character. And yeah, I've mentioned this before on the podcast. He's unusual, but he was well-liked in the dressing room. He also could be very engaged, and he was well-liked. He's very intelligent. He can speak several languages. His English is fantastic. And I mean that not just in terms of conversational English. The way that he uses idioms and the like is brilliant. So I don't want this to be seen as he's always been like a bad egg. He wouldn't have been at Newcastle for 3 years, and would have succeeded in the way that he did if that was the case. Yes, he did flit through periods where he lacked engagement. We wrote about it before the Carabao Cup final in a big read that I did on Isak. People inside the club use the term stimulate. That's what you need to do with Isak. It's almost as if he's so good that you have to stimulate him to get him to perform to his best and keep him concentrated. And maybe he feels to be stimulated, he needs to go to a new challenge beyond Newcastle. I'm not defending anything that he's done, but I also don't want this to make out as if, you know, Alexander Isak has been the worst person inside Newcastle's dressing room for 3 years, because I also don't think that's a fair representation of the last few years.
The 3 years at the club have been wonderful. The manner of his departure is disgraceful. He's treated his teammates, he's treated Eddie Howe, he's treated the fans with absolute contempt.
Yep.
I take on board what you're saying, Chris, but I'm sorry, there's a way to go about things.
I don't disagree.
He has burnt his time at Newcastle with the way that he's behaved this summer. And yeah, okay, fine, he's been popular and been a good lad, you know, over the course of those two or three years. But like, there's a way to behave. He spied his opportunity, and so it's been like, yeah, Well, this is business, and I'll just do what I have to do to get out. But it's horrible.
It is horrible. I agree.
And fine, he's released a statement. Finally released a sort of statement acknowledging Newcastle. The fact that there's no direct mention of Eddie Howe in there, I find pretty incredible. You know, Eddie Howe this summer has bent over backwards to keep the door open for Isak to reintegrate him. He hasn't criticised him in personal terms in public. He talked about what a great human being he was, you know, after he released that first incendiary statement on Instagram. And yeah, fine. I mean, like, it's, as I say, it's football. People kind of do this sort of stuff. I think it stinks.
It does stink, and it leaves a bad taste in the mouth, doesn't it? The fee, Chris, have the owners folded a little bit on the fee, or was it a sensible move? We've heard a lot of times recently that at some point Newcastle will have to sell a big player. Should they have held out for a bit more?
I don't necessarily think so. I mean, I'm split on this in certain ways, given the way that the sort of summer has unfolded. In terms of, at some point Newcastle will have to sell a big player, that has been something they've had to do, and they have had massive PSR gains now from having sold Isak, although equally they've also spent quite a lot of money, so some of that gain has already been whittled away during this window, but it should give them the capacity to be able to spend in January and beyond. In terms of, have the owners folded, was it the sensible move? I think in the end, as George said, it felt like this needed to come to an end. My frustration, and people at Newcastle will probably come back and say we wouldn't have got the fee that that we eventually got had we negotiated with Liverpool a month earlier. But was it worth the extra 15 million or 20 million as they tried to present it with the solidarity payment for what has happened over the course of the last month, for how toxic
how much the time in between in the start of the season, yeah.
Exactly. How much damage has it turned at the start of the season? You could argue Newcastle maybe should have had an extra 5 to 7 points from the start, 5 to 8 points, sorry, from the start of the season. Have they missed out on that by not having a centre forward, by not having Isak out of the door already? Would the counter that would be, if Newcastle negotiated at that stage, would the fees have been even more inflated they had to pay for strikers? So I'm sort of caught in all of the middle of the in the middle of all this. I think the massive frustration I find is that there's a narrative almost trying to be portrayed by someone around the club that, you know, it was always likely that Isak was going to go. That wasn't the impression that was being given all summer. I realise that circumstances change. It was never said that he categorically wouldn't be sold, but the message was very strongly he is not for sale. And they said that conditions had to be met, two of which were signing strikers. Eventually they did that, and one of them was a £150 million price tag. Well, they didn't get that for him. So I think this can't be portrayed necessarily as a win for Newcastle. They have got an astronomical fee for a footballer. Anyone to be paying £125 or £130 million for a footballer is extraordinary. Newcastle managed to get that in the end for someone who basically hasn't played since the back end of last season, and really post-cup final wasn't the same player that you saw before that either. But I think that there has been a lot of collateral damage, and was it worth that extra 15 million in the time in between? I'm not convinced it necessarily was, and I worry about the precedent it maybe sets going forward as to that. A, can you believe anything Newcastle sort of say going forward in terms of their position on things? Again, this is football, things change, football is a lie, as Rafa Benitez says, but also that point about what message does this send to other players? If you want to move, what can you do going forward? Because you can argue the same, Johan Visser did similar, and he managed to get his move to Newcastle as well. So
yeah. And back in March, George, of course, Darren Eales said it would be crazy for an ambitious ownership to consider selling him. How do we reflect on that now?
Yeah, well, I mean, I wrote that in a column that I did sort of immediately after the Isak deal was announced. And I think that's illustrative, you know, just to kind of go back to what people were saying. He also, you know, he was asked about Isak being linked with other clubs, whether in the Premier League or elsewhere, and he sort of said, yeah, that's irritating. It's almost as if we're seen as the next rung down. And he talked about, you know, Isak being tied to a long contract and that there was no, you know, there was no need for Newcastle to sell. So, as I said at the start, like, at the end of it, Newcastle have sold Isak. So, does that mean that the ownership are less ambitious? Does it mean that they're crazy? You know, that they've not only considered it, that they've done it. I mean, there are lots of different ways of looking at it. So, I mean, I can accept, I think, as Chris also says, I can accept that I think that selling him by the end becomes the least worst option. But they have done what they said they wouldn't do, and they've strengthened a team that they consider a rival. We've, you know, again, Liverpool fans would laugh at that notion, and, you know, to a certain extent, they would have a point. You know, Newcastle aren't guaranteed sort of trophy winners there in terms of, you know, finances and all the rest of it. Newcastle aren't in the same category yet. But the big idea at Newcastle is that they get to where Liverpool are, and they've ended up strengthening one of those rival teams. They've lost one of their few world-class players, as I say. Now, what you can't sort of preempt is Isak doing what he did. You know, obviously nobody foresaw that he would be as intransigent as he was. Yes, he had a long-term contract, but ultimately he wasn't fulfilling it at Newcastle. He wasn't playing. He was training on his own. He wasn't part of those three games. And so, you know, sometimes events happen and you have to react, and you have to react to it. But I, you know, again, I agree with Chris. It's difficult to present this as a triumph, because I don't think it is. Newcastle have had to compromise. They've had to compromise in terms of selling him. They've had to compromise in terms of price. They've got an incredible fee for him still. But this was not the outcome that they wanted at the start of the summer, or for most of the summer. The aim for most of the summer was that they would get him to stay. And of course, the priority at the end of last season was to get him to sign a new contract, an enhanced contract. And those things haven't happened. At this moment in time, this feels, again, like the least worst option, and it allows Newcastle to move on, and it allows Newcastle to move on with a stronger squad in terms of depth and with some money in their back pocket, but it's not what anybody wanted.
We had a message as well from Vivek, and they said, this summer may be a learning experience, and what comes next will be the true sign of our owner's ambitions. Letting go of a bad apple and pocketing a huge profit in the process, in my book, counts as a positive. That's fair enough. I think I can...
But just to jump in on the on sort of, and as I mentioned before, it is transformative to a degree, PSR-wise, but Newcastle have also had to pay the best part of £10 million to Real Sociedad as part of a sell-on clause. They also, Isak still had nearly 3 years left on his deal, so they're amortised still about £30 million left on that. So you take that out, and so that's already about sort of £40 million of the which you can remove from that fee. Now, that's still a huge fee that Newcastle have recouped, but it's not that they now have £125 or £130 million, whichever what they want to portray it. It isn't quite as big as that, but it is still huge.
Right, then, I'm going to draw a line under that now, and that's it. We're not going to mention that shit anymore. We're done. Can we agree on that?
Yeah, yeah.
Come on, you Maggies. Right, Johan Vissa, let's have a chat about him. He had his own employment protest at Brentford, didn't he, George?
Well, I mean, there is a kind of strange thing about this. I mean, it does mean that sort of the moral high ground is...
I mean, it's not a high ground at all, like, is it?
It's a bit of a pinhead. I mean, if you're trying to find the moral high ground, good luck. I mean, I think there are plenty of people at Newcastle who were sort of uncomfortable with what Vissa is doing. He's denied that it was the same sort of thing as Isak. I think there is... I mean... If you purely look at this from the parochial, through the parochial eyes of a fan, it's like on the one hand, you've got a player doing everything he can to get out, and then on the other, you've got a player doing everything he can to get in. In those circumstances, that's appealing. Of course, you feel sympathetic to Vissa because he's desperate to come and play for your team. And so, you know, in those terms, it looks good. But of course, you know, Liverpool fans would be saying the same thing about Isak, wouldn't they? I don't like it. You know, as I say, I think it made some people at Newcastle uncomfortable, but they do now have, as I said earlier, they've got their squad now, and they can work on it and move forward, and they do have options at least up front.
The fee being bandied around, Chris, and I'm going to use that term because I like the sound of it, bandied around, is £55 million, but it's anywhere between 50 and £55 million. Is it a tad steep for a 28/29-year-old? Of course he is 28 until he's 29, Chris.
He's 29 today.
He's 29 today. Yeah. Well, there you go then. He is now officially 29, as the mem goes.
Yeah, well, the fact that Newcastle initially bid £25 million for him, and also at the time it was like that Brentford's valuation, which, as I've said repeatedly beforehand, was not only based on what they actually thought was a fair market value. They thought Newcastle's certainly second offer of 35 plus 5 was more than reasonable in quote-unquote normal circumstances, but he was worth more to them in their plight and their need for goals, that having lost Brian Mbeumo, than the fee Newcastle could offer. And also, I think Forrest had a bid of, I think, late 20s rejected in January. So, yes, it is huge inflation. And I think Newcastle accept that. They accept that Voldemort is a huge inflation, really. But they were in a situation where, A, people knew they were getting the Isak money, or thought they were going to get the Isak money, and B, they were desperate.
Yeah.
And everyone knew they were desperate. And so the fees are steep. But for Vissa, I think if Vissa was 23, we'd be saying this is not a snip, because can anyone be a snip at £55 million? I was actually listening to a podcast with a guy called Jacob Whitehead was on it.
Not aware of his work.
He was talking about the across Europe this year, the 50th most expensive fee was what Newcastle played for Malik Chow of £35 million, which just shows how high fees have been in general across Europe. It's been a generally inflated market. Even beyond that, Newcastle have ended up paying more than double what they initially, or at least double what they initially were offering Brentford for Vissa. So it has gone up, but he also scored 19 Premier League goals last season, all from open play. He can play across the front line. He has experience. I think if you're looking for a replacement for Callum Wilson, I'd argue that over the last 18 months, he's a massive upgrade on what Callum Wilson was. Previously, Callum Wilson was a wonderful striker for Newcastle. He hasn't been contributing. Vissa, touch wood, tends to stay fit. So,
also, Chris, he created more non-penalty XG than Alexander Isak last season, and that's not something that's written down. That's just a stat that I had in my head there.
You want to go to George with the non-penalty XG stats?
I like his age. And what I mean by that is that it's very un-Newcastle, isn't it, to go for somebody who's at this point in his career. You know, that the kind of model for most of the time post-takeover has been you know, young players with a sell-on value. That's what kind of everybody wants to do. I like the fact that this actually is, you know, it's much more of a pragmatic signing. What you're saying with this fee, and yes, it's a big fee, but you're saying you've got him for the here and now. You're trying to get 2 years, 3 years out of him. That whole idea of replacing Wilson, that's what this is. It's replacing Wilson in terms of being experienced, bringing that experience into the dressing room, you know, virtually a guarantee of goals. And but he's, you know, he's 3 years younger than Callum Wilson or whatever.
Yeah.
And I like that. It doesn't happen very often. I mean, people look at his age and sort of raise their eyebrows. But if he bangs in goals, then, you know, then it's worth sort of every penny. And it's not just about age. It's about that experience can be really, really important.
Of course, he's Premier League proven as well, George. So you would hope he would hit the ground running. And he's potentially a good complement to Nick Voldemort as well, who's kind of got the room to grow, hasn't he? And Wissa could allow that to happen a bit more.
Yeah, and Wissa takes the number nine shirt, so he sort of has that pressure. He takes that pressure sort of willingly as well. How that works with Voldemort, we'll have to see. You know, Chris, as I've said earlier, you've effectively got two players to replace to kind of replace Isak's goals potentially. But, you know, Newcastle needed options. It's like last season, the season before, when Wilson could not be relied upon in terms of fitness. You know, I've loved watching Callum Wilson play in the number nine shirt. He's a proper old school number nine, you know, who loves causing problems to defenders. I hope it was great to see him score for West Ham the other day. But, you know, Newcastle need options. They need players with different characteristics. They need players to push each other. And, you know, Isak was wonderful, but he wasn't having anybody pushing him last season. So there were games when, you know, there were games when you could kind of question his commitment sometimes or question his form, and he had nobody pushing him. And, you know, the idea of pushing Isak, you know, kind of became ridiculous because he was so good. But everybody needs it. And if there had been a fit Callum Wilson on the bench, the Newcastle squad would have been better for it. And so now there are these options. We talked a bit in the Leeds pod about the qualities Voldemort will bring in terms of, you know, that the quality is on the ball, his willingness to drop deep. You know, Wissa has a very different profile. It's great to have those different sort of profiles, those different options offering different things, but most importantly, a proper competition for places too.
Just briefly to add to that, when I mentioned earlier that it was impossible to replace Isak, as George mentioned, they've given themselves more depth and sort of different options. Newcastle also believe that they have greater potential tactical versatility going forward. These players can play in different positions. Voldemort can play in a few, Wissa can play in a few, the other signings they've made this summer can play in a few, and Newcastle are going to need to mix things up both in Europe and in the Premier League, the different challenges that they have. I mean, at one stage there was a plan floated. Very briefly, I mentioned this in the inside window read, that instead of signing two strikers, Newcastle, if they couldn't get the strikers they wanted, they may have looked to sign another attacking midfielder. I'm glad they didn't in the end, because I think they have needed this depth up front. And with Wissa and Voldemort, at least on paper, at least theoretically, I think Newcastle have some very exciting options there.
Definitely right. And we had an email on Voldemort and our growing German influence. Let's have a listen to this. Thursday, 28th of August, was quite a day. Here are some of the nuggets I noted. Tony Kroos becoming a member of NUFC after watching us play Liverpool. So another person we have to compete with in the ballot for tickets.
Oh, no.
Then Nick Volta Messi signing comes out of nowhere. Absolutely nowhere. Always my favourite type of signing. Yes, I do love that. We find out he's flying at Newcastle that evening. I see somewhere that his flight is the most tracked flight in the world. Over 4,000 people. I love flight tracking during the transfer window. That's from Ian. Yes, the Voldemort signing. I mean, Chris, it just come out of nowhere, didn't it? I mentioned him a couple of weeks ago on the podcast and saying, oh, well, it would be interesting if we had a look at him. I do like him as a player. To which you shut me down quite abruptly, which is fair enough. But then it just happened, didn't it? It just happened.
And this is not, again, to try and necessarily get sympathy for me as a reporter. But it's similar. I mean, the worst case scenarios are when you're trying to cover a takeover, but transfers are the same. And at that point in time, Nick Voldemort was not a live option. Newcastle didn't think he was available. Bayern Munich had three bids rejected. No, it's generally, I asked the question because I'd been asked by other people and I'd heard his name mentioned, and Newcastle was saying, look, we just don't think he's attainable. So that was basically basically less than, or about a week before the deal was then agreed. So Newcastle had like just a few days of negotiations with Stuttgart. I'm wearing actually a Stuttgart t-shirt.
Just I thought it was a Flash Gordon t-shirt until you pulled it off. It looked like a Flash.
It's Stuttgart t-shirt in honour of Voldemort. But it ramped up as they were making bids for Jorgen Strand-Larsen. It was sort of like parallel secret negotiations. And Newcastle tend to pull these out of the bag every now and again. Tonali was similar. Isak, to a degree, was similar in terms of the ramp that one up. Bruno Guimaraes was similar. And they've done some of their best business when they've been able to keep it quiet. I mean, I wrote again in the Inside Read piece that leaks, as Newcastle saw, was they felt damaged them, certainly with the Trafford deal, arguably even with the Ekitike deal, in different ways, same with João Pedro. Whereas for this one, it was basically done before it even leaked out, and it was done very, very quickly. Again, was it for a higher fee? Bayern Munich probably wouldn't have gone to that level, but Newcastle are also pleased that they've managed to get a player Bayern Munich couldn't actually extract from another German side, which is usually what they do. They usually pick off the best players in the Bundesliga. So yeah, I think it's a really exciting signing, and hopefully I think it needs a bit of time, as I mentioned on the previous podcast, but in time that this could prove to be one who will bring very, very thrilling moments to Newcastle fans, because he's unique.
Just very briefly on the Toni Kroos thing, like, I love that, but if you were watching that match as a sort of dispassionate observer, I don't think you would have stayed dispassionate for very long.
Definitely not.
I mean, I know there were kind of extreme circumstances going on, and it was an extreme game in terms of the style of it, and you know how physical it was, and how pragmatic both teams ended up being. But I don't think you could watch that game and not have absolute sort of empathy and sympathy for Newcastle, and also feeling incredibly impressed with the way that they played in that game with everything that's going on around the club. I mean, again, this is, you know, I said it a bit at the top in terms of, thank goodness the whole Isak thing is over. Like, the players and staff to have performed the way they did in those, particularly the first couple of games, I just think says a lot about them, and it says a lot about the team spirit. Yeah.
Did your voice break?
Yeah, my voice is
breaking. Finally hit puberty.
Again, thinking back to that match, it was incredibly impressive. This is what Newcastle have to build on this season, which, you know, with a bit of respite now, hopefully. I mean, I know that all the players have gone away, or international players have gone away, but there is a real fine foundation to build on there. And they may have lost a world-class player, but they've got a really good team, and they now have a really, really good squad. And now that sort of distraction is taken away, there is, you know, really, we should only be looking forward to what's coming next.
Thank you, George.
You're welcome.
Very nice.
Outgoings, or lack thereof, Christopher Wolf. Will Osula to Frankfurt, that became a bit of a prospect on deadline day, didn't it? There was a permanent transfer mooted with a buyback clause for approximately £30 million, with Villa also interested, but it hit a strange and annoying snag right at the end.
Well, yeah, it didn't go through right at the very end, and that would have been very helpful for Newcastle PSR-wise, and it would have been a significant profit, more than double your money inside of a year, when really, has Will Osula justified that? And that's not having to go with Osula, I think it shows again that the way that the inflation of this window. He started his first Premier League match for Newcastle on Saturday, as George mentioned, but basically on Friday before the game, Howard had several opportunities to say that Will Osula would be going nowhere, and he basically didn't say that. Yeah. He said that he needs to be playing, and he needs to be playing now. And Newcastle, I think they were surprised by that they had these two clubs competing, and that's partly why the fee sort of rose. I think it was even higher maybe than Newcastle were anticipating that they might get or were asking for, but because there was competition for him. In the end, it unfortunately didn't happen in terms of financially, but Newcastle then have greater depth there. If they do get injuries, at least they've got someone who can play across the front three, not just as centre forward. And it's frustrating for Osula, because I think he needs to play. I think he's a part of his career where he needs to be playing and playing regularly. But I think some of the criticism he's come in for recently he's been a little bit harsh. Is he ready? No. Is that his fault? I don't think it is necessarily his fault. I think he's tried, and he can never question the commitment that he offers on the pitch. I think tactically, as George mentioned on the podcast the weekend, yes, he is naive at times, and he has so much to learn. But I also think that he always gives his all, and that has to be remembered.
One thing, just very briefly, Taylor, I think we kind of mentioned it in passing about the Leeds match. Obviously, Howe changed his formation. There were injuries and suspensions and things to take into account of. But he also did say before that game that, using his squad was something that was going to have to become, you know, was something that they were going to have to get used to from this season, you know, something that they were going to try and do more this season. In the past, you know, they just haven't had the ability to do that, the options to do that. Back in the last Champions League season, obviously there were all those injuries. You know, remember that game at PSG when, you know, Howe couldn't name a full bench. Newcastle do now have at least two players for every position. I mean, that involves some flexibility on who's playing where. But you would think that when the Carabao Cup comes around again, that might be an opportunity for somebody like Asula to play. And now it is absolutely, it's their job to take the most of those opportunities. I mean, it really is. I think that's kind of quite interesting, though. I think we will see much more rotation in matches because at least that opportunity is there now.
Well, this is it. And the ironic thing as well is even though we've signed two what you would call strikers, Will Asula, in the past, I've noticed he's been deployed by Eddie Howe out wide quite a lot as well.
So yeah, that might be
an opportunity for him to play in cup games, to play in European games and play out on the wing, you know, and maybe he won't have to go and lead the line and won't have to have that tactical discipline. But there you go. You never know, do you? Jamal Lascelles, George, as well. He's remained on Tyneside, hasn't he?
That's a kind of source of interest because obviously Malik Chow comes in and, you know, that does now mean that Lascelles is quite a long way down the list. And so there was a thought that perhaps he might go. He's in the final year of his contract now. What would he be, Chris? Sort of six on the list? I'm trying to do the maths in my head.
Fifth in terms of if you're going for out and out centre backs, but you also have to remember Emil Kraft has played there as well.
I'm sure Howe is delighted that he's staying in the sense that, you know, we always say these things about Jamal Lascelles. It kind of feels a bit unfair that you talk about his leadership qualities ahead of him, you know, ahead of his qualities as a player, but, you know, saw how highly he was thought of in the celebrations after the League Cup win. You know, he's still very much part of it. For the good of his own career, he needs to play matches, you would think. And so, yeah, there was a thought that now might be the time for him to leave. But, it didn't happen.
Yeah, but culturally, just on that, I think to keep him around is important. It probably would have been for the best for him playing-wise if he went somewhere else. But he remains the club captain and he remains a huge voice behind the scenes and part of the leadership team.
We also saw loans for Travis Hearns, who went to Groningen, and Trevon Sanusi went to Lorient as well. Young players there, hopefully going to get some development time out on loan. Right then, chaps, the final transfer ledger, £241 million spent, £151.5 million recouped. Squad in good shape. PSR, Chris, is that all sorted for now? We don't have to worry about that ever again, do we, Chris? PSR, do we? Chris?
I think if you sell Alexander Isak, Chris? Then they just change the rules. They just never affect you going on. No, I mean, it certainly has aided Newcastle's PSR situation. It's not something they're going to have to be too concerned about in the here and now, and potentially allows them to spend in January as they want to be able to do if they need to augment the squad mid-season, which they couldn't do in each of the last 2 years. But that's not, as I've mentioned already, Newcastle have already spent quite a lot of that sort of headroom. They almost went for Voldemort, expecting that if they got money for Isak, then that would cover part of that, and obviously Visser as well. But still, yes, there is significant room there going forward, but they have to. It isn't just infinite that it'll just continue to go on. But in terms of the squad being in good shape, yes, I think unquestionably the squad is deeper than it was before the window started, which is the first time you've been able to say that in a couple of years. You can never judge a window until time passes. We go back to the summer of 2023 when Livramento and Hall come in and it looks like you're thinking about the future. I predict and I think that a lot of these signings will be very good for Newcastle, but you're never quite sure how it will work out. I think Jacob Ramsey was promising during his time on Saturday, although then he gets an injury, which obviously has been the concern for him. Every position, I think they've added options to, that they wanted to add options to. And so going forward and for the challenges of the Champions League and all the fronts they have to compete on, that is great, as I just mentioned at the top end of the show. Though, is the first 11 as good as it was previously? You can argue in certain areas it may have been better, but at the very, very top of the pitch, Newcastle have gone for two players to replace one because he's basically irreplaceable.
Yeah, and so, something that Chris has kind of pointed out and the things he's written, you know, you get to the end of this window and Newcastle have strengthened all of the positions that they wanted to strengthen. I mean, I think that is an important point, whether it was right wing, you know, an area that Eddie Howe has been looking to strengthen for 3 years, you know, there is now good quality there. There's, you know, obviously Jacob Murphy and Anthony Elanga, that right centre-half position, there is now depth there. That's been the other holdout in terms of strength in depth. You know, as we've seen with Isak, you can never tell what life is going to throw at you, what football is going to throw at you. But it does feel like Newcastle have got good options in pretty much every position now. You know, one of the kind of the stories so far this season has been seeing Tino Livramento at left back doing really, really well with Trippier back at, you know, right back. They've got good options. It feels like they've got good options across the pitch. They've got, and, you know, it's not just options in terms of bodies, it's options in terms of doing different things. I mean, it was great seeing Jacob Ramsey, you know, offer a different skill set in midfield. You know, obviously it's huge, missing Joelinton is kind of massive, but there was somebody able to carry the ball up the pitch, you know, do that kind of Joe Willock sort of role. And I think that's the exciting thing that, you know, again, you look, kind of look up front in those forward positions, Harvey Barnes, Anthony Gordon, the Elanga, Murphy, they're not identikit players. They offer different options. And, you know, very often in the past, we've sometimes looked at the first team and thought, well, that looks a bit threadbare, but there's a few decent options on the bench. All the other way around, it's like, this is a great team, but there's just nothing in reserve to come on and change a game. Newcastle now have the ability to set a tone in matches. They also, theoretically, have the ability to change a match with the players that they have in reserve. And yes, that's really exciting. That's such a massive part of the game now. And it's not something that Newcastle have had in the past consistently. So, yeah, I'm excited about that.
Well, let's hope for progress at the top of the club now as well. One significant development we're expecting in this men's international window, David Hopkinson to assume role of CEO, Chris. We're looking at an announcement maybe today or maybe later in the week, but I'm sure we'll cover it in more depth afterwards.
Yeah, so this feels like a big moment, as I mentioned at the top end on the headlines. I think that this is almost the sort of post-window reset for Newcastle. They've gone through a period which, in my opinion, they shouldn't have had to go through without a CEO who was able to be in full capacity of his work, because very unfortunately, as we know, Darren Eales has been receiving treatment. Hopefully that treatment is working well, given that he has been diagnosed with a chronic form of blood cancer. He announced his departure last September. He was serving out his notice. Newcastle have gone on an exhaustive search for his successor, and they will argue that eventually they think they've landed on the right person and that it had to take the time that it did. I feel that that's a slight exaggeration. I do think that they could have done with having someone through the door sooner. Obviously, they also haven't had a sporting director. We think that Ross Wilson will follow in the not-too-distant future of that. But for Hopkinson, it feels big. It feels like a massive moment. Both there's the decision still waiting on the stadium and what's going to happen there. And he will obviously have a voice within that, and Newcastle fans want to hear the decision, and also just general commercial revenue. He comes very much from the commercial side. He started in ice hockey with the Toronto Maple Leafs on the sales side. He rose up during 24 years there to eventually be their chief commercial officer. So that was in his home country of a group which run multiple franchises across multiple sports. He went across to Real Madrid, global head of partnerships on that side for them for a couple of years. He then went back to North America to the Madison Square Garden Group, who run the New York Knicks and also the New York Rangers, so across multiple sports. He was chief operating officer there and president. So basically, he brings a wealth of experience. He's not coming in to run football operations, although obviously, hierarchically, he reports at the board, he's at the top. He's very much on the business side of the club, and he has a huge job ahead of him, but Newcastle have needed leadership. Hopefully, he brings it. Hopefully, he brings longevity as well, because Newcastle need longevity in those positions.
Just like to echo those things. I mean, Newcastle are crying out for leadership. They're crying out for somebody, you know, at the top of the club. I mean, one of the things that's been really, you know, unfortunate, difficult, said this so many times about the club in the past, that it's been left to the manager, the head coach, to sort of take the brunt of everything this summer. I'm not saying that a chief executive would have been coming out and speaking every 5 minutes about Alexander Isak, for example, but it's, you know, it just feels like Eddie Howe has been left to, you know, been left to dangle yet again. Of course, you need leadership when it comes to dealing club to club, and whether that leadership is sporting director, you need somebody to be able to go back to the ownership to talk about what strategy is, to, you know, to find out what's happening, what the big idea is, to tell them what the big idea is. Even late on with ESAC, people around the kind of first team were waiting for some decision from PIF, and it's felt like, you know, it's not felt connected, it's not felt flexible, it's not felt fleet of foot. You know, I think another thing to point out is, I mean, it just seems, again, it just seems crazy that Newcastle have not had a sporting director, yes. But there's been this churn at the top of the club for the second summer running. And again, you can only feel really sorry for Eddie Howe. I think, like, you know, when Andy Howe was effectively moved up to become sporting director, there was some cynicism. I think in the end, you know, Newcastle have done really well. He's done really well to get the players through the door. I think we have to absolutely acknowledge that. But it's not a job that he sought. It wasn't the job that he was supposed to be doing. And, you know, it needs somebody to get a grip at the top of the club to set the tone, you know, to set the tone and to sort of explain what Newcastle are trying to be. And I quoted Darren Eales in terms of what he said about ESAC. You know, you can't foresee some of these things that have happened around, you know, in terms of events, but it's like Newcastle can't be in this position. It's not the way a big club operates, and there needs to be leadership, there needs to be consistency, and there needs to be some continuity.
Right then, the Lasses. Let's have a quick update on the Lasses as they head into the new WSL2 season. They hit the Granger market to help out this week as well, and that new season is approaching rapidly. A 2-0 defeat to Bristol City in the last warm-up game, but another new sign-in, Finnish international striker Una Sevenius, sounds like an exciting prospect. Familiar force to kick us off with Forest at the City Ground, albeit both squads are much changed from previous contests. George, no ifs, no buts. Promotion's got to be the target, hasn't it?
It has to be, and it is. They're not, you know, they're not hiding away from that. I mean, they said the same thing last season, let's not forget. Yep. I mean, they went into last season, you know, hoping and thinking that they could do the treble in terms of automatic promotions, consecutive promotions. But yeah, it is absolutely the target this time. There is a big incentive as well because the format of the WSL is changing, so there are extra promotion places. I mean, it's been a brutal existence for Newcastle over the past few seasons in that there's only been one automatic promotion place, one promotion place. They knew from the start last season that they were fighting out with London, for example, and that it was going to be very, very tough. This season, it's different. There are two automatic promotion places, and then the team that finishes third goes into a playoff with the bottom team from the WSL. So, like, but every club, you know, knows the same thing. Durham will be thinking the same thing. All the, you know, all the clubs that are in that division have that same incentive. But it does feel like this is the season to do it. And there's been, you know, again, huge change within the women's team too. They've made some big signings, some very ambitious signings. It's going to be about how quickly, you know, how quickly those players are integrated and come together as a team. But yeah, there's no shielding the ambition. It's about going up.
And our exact schedule is yet to be decided, but we hope to have an extra show for you between now and next Wednesday when the next weekly podcast will be recorded. So I'm sure we'll be able to get into it a bit more about the Lasses during that. There's a huge Sunday in store for the North East and for our podcast team as well with the Great North Run. George, are we expecting tears, chap nipples? What are we thinking this year?
Well, you should always expect tears and chafed nipples. Yeah, I can guarantee both of those. Yeah, I'm not wishing to blow my own trumpet, but I'm going to. I wrote some words for the Great North Run a few years ago, and they're being used around their whole campaign at this time, sort of with the hashtag "We Are the Great North Run," and those words have been printed out. They're on the medal and the finisher's shirt, and they've been printed out and they're on Fenwick's window. That was launched at the start of this week, but if you're in Newcastle and wandering around, go and have a look at Fenwick's window, and you'll see some of those words. So just a massive honour. Brendan Foster is a huge hero of mine. The Great North Run has become, for me, the biggest and best day of the year. And hugely proud to be running alongside Jacob and producer Ollie. We're running, as always, for the Sir Bobby Robson Foundation. And we run as part of what we call Bobby's team, kind of football writers, football people, with some of Bobby's family involved too and friends, kind of running in football style shirts. I hope and think that Bobby would have been kind of tickled by that idea. And yeah, you can, if you search Bobby's Team 2025 on Just Giving, you'll find us. We'd appreciate any sponsorship. But yeah, it's going to be it's always a big day. It's going to be even more emotional this time.
So does that mean that the Christmas theme this year for Fenix Window is the Grinch, if you're in the window there, George? But just on that, just to actually say, no, I am very, very proud, and George should be very, very definitely proud of that. I am going to blow his trumpet. That
Wonderful
and right recognition. Oh, yeah, right. I've said weird words there. Which
Chris going hard on blowing my trumpet.
Right, let's move on from that quite quickly. But just to say, yes, best of luck to all of those running it for all of the wonderful causes that you will be.
That's
always
the pot of the time brass section there. Very nice. Well done, chaps.
Chris needs help.
Yes, he certainly does. I think we all do, to be honest. Right, a couple of emails quickly before we finish off for the day. I've been slowly becoming an English football fan for the last 10 years. I'm now absolutely obsessed. About 5 or 6 years ago, I decided I needed a team, and I landed on Newcastle United for several reasons. Living in the States, the news coverage is harder to find, but with soccer growing in America and advancement in technology, it's getting better. I read just about everything Chris and George write. Oh, that's a shame, isn't it? But the best thing that's happened is finding this podcast. I love listening to real Geordies talking and reporting about the squad passionately and fairly. It's always the highlight of my week. And not to get too sentimental, it makes me feel part of the Newcastle family somehow. Your fan in Iowa, William Dodds. That's very, very lovely.
Well, that's wonderful.
That's beautiful. And William, you don't need to feel part of the family. You are part of the family. Yeah, you are.
Here's another one. Love the pod, and I wanted to shout you out for being a direct contributor to Newcastle gaining a new diehard supporter. As a Geordie abroad, podcasts are my way of keeping in touch with the happenings of my beloved football club. My Australian apprentice has little to no care about football. However, being forced to listen to Pod on the Tyne, he's now starting conversations about the Isak saga, checking scores, and on Tuesday morning we were heartbroken together when Liverpool scored in the 100th minute. That's K-U-T-G-W? What's that?
Keep up the good work.
Keep up the good work. I'm not an acronym guy. That's from Jamie and Matt, a new Australian fan for life. There you go.
Sounds like a sort of torture technique, doesn't it? Being forced to listen to Pod on the Tyne. No more sausages. No more sausages.
Again, a wonderful message. Apologies for all the innuendo then, if they've got to listen to the podcast on this one, so apologies for that.
It's all your fault, Chris. Come on.
It certainly is. But we do love receiving your emails, absolutely, from all over the world. Please get them to us at podonthetyne@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, X, or Blue Sky on @podonthetyne. And do help us make an impression in the podcast market as well by giving us a rating and a review on your podcast outlet of choice. Right then, chaps, I think that's just about it. I'm off for a lie down in a darkened room. I don't know about you, Chris. How are you feeling?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, we've had a few messages to the account on social media, basically asking why we didn't have an immediate reaction to the deadline podcast, which, because we know we are dexterous now, we were able to do that. And basically the answer is because we were broken.
Absolutely.
So apologies that this came out a couple of days later, but hopefully this would have been better than if we'd immediately tried a podcast then, because then it would have just been us basically trying to stay awake on deadline day. So yeah.
Yes. George, all good? How are you feeling after that?
Yeah. Good to kind of get all those things off our chest, I think, isn't it, really? And yes. As I say, I mean, yeah, we can sort of look back and see what might have been or what could have been or what the intention was. I think it's important to kind of go through all those things. But the thing that I'm really excited about and looking forward to is actually the football, because it means we can think about that. We can look forward to it. We've kept having to remind ourselves that there's actually a lot to be excited about and to look forward to. And, you know, we're going to be podcasting all the way through it, all along the way. Really can't wait. Can't wait to see a striker.
Champions League on the horizon, George.
Can't wait to see a striker play for Newcastle, and I can't wait for the Champions League. Yeah, come on, bring it
on. Brilliant stuff.
So exciting.
Brilliant stuff. Right, then that's it. Thank you very much for listening. From everybody at Pod on Time, we hope you have a good week. Cheers, Chris. Cheers, George. We'll speak to you very, very soon. Take care. Goodbye.
It's been a roller coaster.
Newcastle roller coaster.